All right, here we are on a Sunday evening after the Rangers put game one in their pockets. Exciting, nerve-wracking at the end of that one at Madison Square Garden. But the Rangers, thanks to their hot start, their three-goal first period, that's the way to begin a playoff series. Coming out of the gates with a goal within the first 3 minutes, Carolina answers right away, and then the Rangers add two power play goals before the first period is over. Take that 3-1 lead all the way into period number three. Carolina cuts the lead in half. A huge goal from Artemi Panarin gives the Rangers a little bit of a cushion midway through the third period, and they were able to withstand the Carolina barrage. They pulled their goalie with 3 minutes left in the game. The Rangers got hit with what could have been a very costly penalty during that stretch against Vincent Trocheck. Fortunately for them, Carolina answered, taking a penalty of its own. One big save down the stretch for Igor Shesterkin, and there you go. 4-3, Rangers over the Hurricanes in game number one at Madison Square Garden. We've got plenty to talk about here till 10 o'clock. We'll start with the Rangers. Obviously, that is the freshest story as they just wrapped up game number one. 1-800-919-3776. Your thoughts on that? Obviously, we're going to do a ton of Knicks during this show. Game one of that series against the Pacers. Also, round number two is tomorrow at Madison Square Garden. Monica McNutt and I will have the call of that and the entire series. There was a game seven in the NBA earlier today. What a game seven that was, as the Cleveland Cavaliers show a lot of fight and a lot of character just when it looked like this little mini era of Cavaliers basketball, this successful two-year stretch that they had, was going to come crashing to an end on their home floor. They and their all-star guard, Donovan Mitchell, responded in a big way in the second half, leading the Cavs to a Game 7 victory over a young Orlando Magic team that will most likely be back on this stage next year and in the years to come. As far as the Rangers go, you know, this was quite a statement in Game 1 at the Garden. If you think about it, this Rangers team kind of stamped itself as one of the best teams in the NHL very early on with their hot start. And then during the months of December and into January, when they were missing key personnel, obviously playing most of the entire season without Filip Hedl, Igor Shesterkin even missed some time. Adam Fox missed about a month. And the play kind of leveled off a little bit. And they jumped out to that really fast start. And then teams, most specifically the Carolina Hurricanes, were able to close the gap during that time. And then around January, really towards the end of the season, the Rangers never really went into another rut. And by mid-January, they had established themselves as one of the best teams in the NHL, clearly, on that short list of five or six teams that were the strongest contenders to go very, very deep in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And then ultimately, it resulted in finishing with the best record in the entire NHL, which was not easy to wrap up. They weren't able to do that until the second-to-last game of the regular season, game number 81, but they did. They wrapped up the President's Trophy. They were able to stave off the Carolina Hurricanes. That was the amazing thing about this regular season in the Metropolitan Division, as well as the Rangers played really all year long. Like I said, there wasn't, other than that three or four-week stretch December into January when they were dealing with a lot of injuries, there wasn't really a long-sustained period of a slump for this team. Despite all of that, despite statistically one of the best or the best regular season record in the history of this franchise, they weren't able to shake this Carolina team until the last couple games of the regular season, which was amazing. I mean, the Rangers not only were in jeopardy of not winning the President's Cup, they were in jeopardy right up until the very end of the regular season schedule of not even winning the Metropolitan Division, which would have been an amazing turn of events. But they did. They obviously survived. They wrapped that up. They got a very favorable first-round matchup against the Washington Capitals and made quick work of them, as, you know, teams with championship aspirations are supposed to do. You know, we have seen it a lot in recent years in the NHL. Top seeds, like number one seeds, go back as recent as last year. The Boston Bruins losing in seven games in the first-round series to the Florida Panthers, a series that the Bruins looked to have salted away, but they allowed the Panthers to hang around And that can tend to happen in the NHL when you let one of these quote-unquote lesser teams hang around in a playoff series. There was none of that from the Rangers in the series against the Capitals. They took care of business right off the bat. They never gave Washington even a semblance of a thought that they could compete in the series. They dispatched them in four games. They rested for a week and got ready for this afternoon's game one at Madison Square Garden. Despite all of that, the hot start to the season, the President's Trophy, the best record in the NHL, the first round sweep of the Capitals, despite all of that, they come into this game and this series underdogs. They were underdogs for the series. They were underdogs in game number one, despite all of that. So, you know, it seems like an element of disrespect for what this team has accomplished all season long. I remember a game in February where the Rangers went down to Carolina. And at the time, as for the entire second half of the season, the standings were razor thin. The Rangers, I believe, were 3 points ahead of Carolina. The Hurricanes still very much had a chance to jump over them into first place. Carolina had had two or maybe even 3 days off coming into the game. The Rangers were on the second night of a back-to-back. They had to fly down to Raleigh and play that game. And Shesterkin shut them out. It was one of the Rangers' most impressive wins of the entire season. I remember calling it at the time a measuring stick game and being warned that it's not really a fair measurement because of the situation of the game. The Rangers were on the second night of a back-to-back, and the Hurricanes had been sitting around resting for a couple of days. And despite all of that, despite all of those rest advantages and the home ice advantage, and I know it's just a regular season game, but at the time it was a big regular season game. The Rangers took care of business in that game, and I thought that was incredibly impressive. And that just adds to the case here where the Rangers, I think, are, you know, if I'm sitting in that dressing room right now or, you know, leading up to this series, there is clearly a thought in my head that there is a level of disrespect. Now, does that bother them? How much does that play into it on the ice? Probably not a lot, but that is, you know, how I'm looking at this series. I mean, what more could this Rangers team have done during the regular season, right? Better record, won the division, beat them head-to-head, swept their first-round series. I know Carolina was pretty dominant in its first-round series, too. They needed a couple of comeback wins within their games to beat the Islanders, but they took care of them in five games. So here we are. So for the Rangers to come out, not only start the series like that, but to start game one like that, and to start the first period like that was really impressive. A 5-on-5 goal from Mika Zibanejad was really impressive. You know, you look at the areas where the Rangers were a little deficient this season. And one of the biggest concerns all season long was 5-on-5 scoring, especially from Mika Zibanejad. And for him to come out and score 5-on-5, 3 minutes into the game, terrific sign. And like I said, Carolina kept on coming. And I think that this first game is probably indicative of how this series is going to play out. It was a tough, hard-fought game that even though the Rangers pretty much were in control the entire time, right? I mean, they take the lead less than 3 minutes into the game. A minute later, Carolina ties it up. Jacob Slavin answers Zibanejad's goal. It's 1-1. And then the Rangers go to work on the power play. And the special teams were the difference in this game. The Rangers were 2-for-2 when they were on the power play. And the Hurricanes were 0-for-5 when they were on the power play. So the Rangers had a huge advantage in the power play and a huge advantage in the penalty kill. And ultimately, that was the difference in this game one. Zibanejad scores on the power play. It's 2-1. They get another man advantage later in the period. And Vincent Trocheck scores out in front. All of a sudden, it's 3-1. Zibanejad in that first period actually had a somewhat of a breakaway where he was 1-on-1 with the goalie, Frederik Andersen, and tried to get, I think, a little too creative and pass the puck back to his oncoming teammate. And the pass didn't connect, and the Rangers missed a scoring chance there. But Zibanejad actually had what looked to be a really good chance at a natural hat trick in that first period. But everything was working for the Rangers in that first period. Igor Shesterkin wasn't overly taxed in those first 20 minutes. Some areas of concern for the Rangers. You know, a little bit sloppy. You give the other team five power plays. That's playing with fire, especially a Carolina team that was so proficient on the power play during the regular season. I mean, this is one of the best teams and one of the best power play teams in the entire NHL. But the resolve of the Rangers throughout this game, you know, Zibanejad gets the goal, Slavin answers a minute later. And then by the end of the first period, the Rangers have two more in the net on the power play goals from Zibanejad and Trocheck. Early in the third period, Carolina scores to make it 3-2. And then Artemi Panarin answers that to give the Rangers their two-goal lead right back. And then things got real, let's just call it what it is, got real hairy in the final 3 minutes. And, you know, we've seen this more and more in recent years in the NHL, the pulling of the goalie. Coaches do it a lot earlier now than they used to. And sometimes it could backfire right away. Like if you pull your goalie with three and a half, four minutes to play in a game, and the other team scores right away, and all of a sudden you go from down two to down by three, well, that can essentially end the game at that point if you're down by three with 4 minutes left. That's what Rod Brind'Amour did here today. He pulled Anderson with about 3 minutes to go, and from that point on, the Rangers could not get the puck out of their zone. And the Hurricanes, who were winning, for the most part, the faceoff advantage was about even. There wasn't a huge advantage one way or another. But in that third period, especially during that period of time when the Rangers were trying to get the puck out of their zone, they couldn't. And finally, with a minute 47 to go, Seth Jarvis scores to make it 4-3. And now you're like, wow, that's not only did they cut the lead in half, but minute 47, a lot of time to go. Then you start getting worried about the next power play, the one at center ice, off of that scored goal, because that became a very important power play. And what happened? Carolina got possession of the puck. They settled into the Rangers' offensive zone again. And then Vincent Trocheck took what could have been a disastrous penalty, shoveling with his hand the puck up over the glass in the defensive zone for a delay of game penalty with 40 seconds to go. So not only does that make the skating advantage 6-on-4, but it also put the Rangers' best faceoff man for a crucial faceoff in the penalty box. And then Mika Zibanejad, who already had the brilliant game going, Zibanejad won that ensuing draw, and it led to a tripping penalty against Staal that evened things out again. Now they were skating 4-on-4, and it also brought the faceoff all the way down to the other end of the ice. So Carolina had to put Anderson back in goal. They had to gain possession of the puck, which they did, before they pulled their goalie again. But all of that takes time. When you're down to 40, 35, 30 seconds to go and you still need a goal, all of those things take time on Carolina's end. And then Zibanejad won another huge faceoff, okay? And then nearly forced a turnover, actually did force a turnover at center ice, and made a terrific effort diving with his stick, lunging at the puck with his stick to pry it free of the Carolina defender. And poking it towards the goal, and it almost went in for an empty net goal that would have sealed the game right there. It would have given Zibanejad his hat trick. Now, what it did do was it took about 12 seconds of time off the clock. So by the time Carolina was able to keep the puck out of the net, retrieve it in the corner, and bring it back up ice, there was less than 15 seconds to go, and they essentially had one more shot at tying the game, and time expired. So just a really, really good opening effort for the Rangers. I don't know. Look, if you look at what can this game mean for the entirety of the series, I don't think it changes your opinion a lot, right? I mean, the Rangers were supposed to win this game. They had home ice advantage. They were the more rested team. And if the Rangers had lost this game, if Carolina was able to score two goals with their goalie on the bench and tie it and send it to overtime and even win this game in overtime, that would have been such a disastrous loss for the Rangers. So ultimately, the best thing that comes out of this game for the Rangers is, number one, clearly the fact that they now lead this series 1-0, and they have not yet lost a game in these Stanley Cup playoffs. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is this, just the fact that what you avoided, and what you avoided was losing a game that you had kind of dominated, not kind of, that you had pretty much controlled from the opening faceoff. So 1-0 series lead for the Rangers, and that sets up game number two on Tuesday night. Cool. All right, so we just heard Don LaGreca on the post-game show on his way home, kind enough to call in and give some of his thoughts. Don, how are you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. Great to chat with you. You were obviously on the broadcast for us this afternoon. Really good first game for the Rangers. Really good start. You always wonder how those things are going to go after the long layoff and so much anticipation leading into a series. But, you know, overall, what were your thoughts on the game one performance?
Well, it's going to take everything to beat Carolina. I think game one is going to be a microcosm of this series. I felt like it going in that, like, every win is going to feel like giving birth, and that's kind of what game one was. Because in so many ways they were dominant, in so many ways they were effective, but here we are, 40 seconds to go, face off to the right of Igor Shesterkin, with Carolina having a two-man advantage with a chance to tie the game. You know, so this team's not going to go away. I don't think they're going to blink by losing the first game. And they're going to come back and go to work in game two. And I expect a really long series that the Rangers just have to be prepared for. And I think they are. I mean, they've won five in a row. But this is no offense to Washington, but this is a different level. This is a different test. Good luck taking five penalties a game against this Carolina team and it not affect you. As good as this kill is, you don't want to test those waters too much. It's going to come back and bite you at some point. And you'd like to see them be a little bit more effective 5-on-5, although they did have two goals 5-on-5, but Carolina, you know, was able to get 2 5-on-5 and then one with the extra attacker. So it shows you how even the series can be when they're at equal strength. And the Rangers' power play is just a beast right now. And Carolina's got to be thinking the same thing. We can't take penalties. Rangers went 2 for 2. You know, so that's pretty disciplined hockey to only commit two penalties, but to get burned both times. So I'm sure Carolina wants to change some things. Rangers want to change some things, but this is the way this series is going to be, Pat. It's going to be a hard-fought, long series, and if you get ready for a tension convention, because I think the potential of the next six games are all going to probably be very similar.
Yeah, and one guy, and you mentioned the 5-on-5 scoring. Look, that's been a concern for the Rangers this season, especially when you talk about Mika Zibanejad, and he actually had a 5-on-5 goal less than 3 minutes into the game. It was the start of a terrific afternoon. I mean, he had those two goals and an assist before the first period was over. And I was just describing the sequence of plays that he made at the end of the game, you know, winning a couple of draws with Trocheck in the box. Mm-hmm. That great effort at center ice to pry the puck free and nearly score an empty net goal that would have given him a hat trick and that would have sealed the game right there. But even though it didn't go in, it took precious seconds off the clock. But overall, it was just a terrific afternoon for Zibanejad.
No, he's a terrific player. And listen, it is what it is. He did go long stretches this year without scoring 5-on-5. The whole team did. But sometimes I think we make too much of the 5-on-5 because the special teams are just so good. You know, there were three on the power play. There were third on the kill. It's been just as effective here in the postseason. So it's so good compared to the special teams. The 5-on-5 looks like it's average. But what it kind of just shows you is how special the Rangers can be on special teams, but how things even themselves out, no pun intended, when you're playing 5-on-5. And there's still a lot of work that has to be done by this team. So I thought that you were great, you know, describing that at the end. That's what Zibanejad is. He wins faceoffs with Trocheck in the penalty box. He was going to have to be the guy to step up. He's a quality defensive player that probably deserves a lot more consideration for the Selke Trophy than he gets. And he's as responsible as any player. And He probably deserves a little bit more credit for how he plays 5-on-5 beyond scoring. And there's other things about hockey than just scoring goals. It's being responsible, winning faceoffs, playing well defensively. And he's had the ability to do that all year. I thought Wennberg was very good as well. Doesn't pop up as far as stats, Pat, as scoring is concerned, but how responsible he is in key situations. Remember, Carolina only had 12 shots on goal through the first 40 minutes of this game, and then the ice got tilted certainly in the third period when they were pushing to try to get back into the game. But that all comes from not just the blue line, but how defensively responsible these forwards are.
Don LaGreca on his way back from the Rangers game one victory, 4-3 over the Carolina Hurricanes. Don, of course, called the clincher in round one down in Washington a week ago. This was the Rangers' first time on the ice since then, and they lead the second round series 1-0. That third period goal by Panarin, and it seemed like the Rangers always seem to have the answer today. They score the early goal with Mika. Carolina scores right back, but by the end of the first period, they're up 3-1. Then it's 3-2 early in period number three, and that goal by Panarin that turns out to be the game winner, that was a huge momentum shifter at the time.
Yeah, it was, and I thought it was kind of a tough one for Anderson, too. I mean, I think he's a terrific goaltender, but that's probably one he wants to have back, kind of trickled through him, because that's what it comes down to. I was talking to Larry before the game tonight, and I said, you know, goaltending, I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring series, and, you know, goaltending, there might not be a lot of opportunities, and it may not really just come down to a goaltender making a big save. It's going to come down to a goaltender just not allowing one. So like what John Davidson used to say, sometimes it's not the one that you save, it's the one that you give up. And that's, you're not going to have a chance to blink in this series, Pat. You're just not. I mean, any mistake is going to be gargantuan because there's just not going to be any margin for error. And that it ended up costing the game. You know, you might say that the Natchez goal wasn't the greatest that Igor gave back, but I thought the Anderson goal on Panarin was probably one that he could have made the save, and that turns out to be the difference in the game. So Anderson's a terrific goaltender. The knock on him when he was in Toronto is they used him too much. That was not the case here this year because he had been out for a length of time, so he's not overworked. But I'll take Igor Shesterkin over a lot of goaltenders in this league, including Frederik Anderson, and Igor didn't make that bad goal. He that was a killer. Because maybe it's a completely different game. The fallacy of the predetermined outcome, you know, they did score. We don't know if they would have if it was 3-2, not 4-2. But, boy, did it really change the complexion of the game when Panarin scored that goal.
Yeah, now that was going to lead me into my next question. I mean, and even the stats today bear it out. It was razor tight this game today. And like you said, I mean, that's what's kind of expected from this series. It seems to me that one of the Rangers' bigger advantages over Carolina is in net with Igor Shesterkin.
Yeah, I think you look at that January, and it was a tough January for Shesterkin, to be the first to admit it. But there's been a lot more good than bad. And he's really been on his game really since the 1st of February when he just caught fire. And if he's going to play at that level, that changes everything. Because we almost don't talk about him, Pat. We almost take him for granted. Because the Rangers are so good up front. I mean, they got a ton of stars. You know, Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider, Trocheck, Lafreniere's had a career year. And then you look at defensively, Fox has won a Norris Trophy. And that Igor's back there, and he's not. See, Hank used to face 50 shots a game sometimes, Pat. You know, like Hank would sometimes be asked to stand on his head. Igor's never really asked to do that too much. I mean, he's never facing, like, high-volume shots. I could probably count on one hand in my memory of him facing, you know, more north of 35 shots in games during the course of the regular season. But that doesn't mean he shouldn't be appreciated. I mentioned in the postgame, like, tonight, all right, 25 shots. He made, 22 saves. So he had the breakaway on Jordan Staal. But there's little moments that don't seem big at the time when you look back at the game and go, man, if he gives up that Staal goal, you know, if he gives, you know, there was a few saves there towards the end that they weren't spectacular, but you wouldn't be surprised if other goaltenders would have given them up. So it's hard to say that Igor is underrated, but I think sometimes in the overall evaluation of where this team is going, he does get forgotten among the other stars on the team.
Speaking with Don LeGrec after you wrapped up post-game coverage, pre- and post-game coverage of the Rangers' Game 1 win over the Hurricanes at the Garden 4-3. What was the energy like in the building, Don? 40 seconds to go. The Rangers now clinging to a 4-3 lead. And then all of a sudden, Trocheck kind of shovels that puck over the boards for a delay of game penalty.
Oh, my God, just the tension. And you see it with Knicks, too. Sometimes nervous energy, you can really sense it from the crowd. Like when there's a big game and maybe there's apprehension going in, sometimes the crowd, you know, senses that. And the building was up for grabs after the Zibanejad goal and when they were serenaded off the ice after the first period. And here we are, their heart's in their throat. I honestly, after Trocheck did that, I'm like, this is not going to end well. Because these are the kind of penalties that absolutely kill you. And they were 4-for-4, and it's a face-off. And you saw how Carolina was really putting pressure on for most of that third period. And you didn't worry too much because you had the two-goal lead. But then once they made it 4-3, and they didn't stop, they were getting a lot of chances. So I can't speak for all the fans, but the building just felt like you're almost bracing for how are we going to deal with this if we've got to go to overtime. And I thought the call was the right one. on the Svechnikov trip after the faceoff. I don't think it was a makeup call. Trocheck committed the penalty. Clearly, he batted it out of the air, and then that was a trip, and they called it. And then the building kind of just relaxed at that point, because, as you pointed out, faceoff's on the other end of the ice, so you get the real estate. Anderson's got to go back in. Just changes everything. So, boy, the energy, the building just exploded, because that would have been a really, really tough pill to swallow, Pat. If we're still playing right now and they lose this game in overtime as well as they played, I think it would have changed everything. And now you come away with a win, but still know you got work to do. And that's always a good place to be able to make improvements off of a win. And we'll see what they can do on Tuesday. I'd love to find out what time the game is. I guess this is the problem when you got TNT and ESPN all with the same leagues, right? So it's not just what happens in Dallas tonight. It's what happened earlier today with Cleveland and Orlando, and what network's going to get what series and what sport and everything else. But, you know, at least we know it's going to be Tuesday at some point, and see if they can.
That impacts you, though, Don, right? That impacts you. It's, do you do the pregame show in the studio and then go to the Garden? Do you have time to go to the Garden to do the pregame show? This impacts your day on Tuesday.
You know, there is something to be said for an 8 o'clock face-off, get off the case show at 6:30, like a gentleman, get on the subway, go to the Garden, get a nice meal, and then do the pregame show, as opposed to having to do the pregame show from the studio and then, like, listen to the app and then rush in the subway or a cab to get to the Garden. But I just want to know what time it starts and just not get a bunch of overtimes and try to get to bed, because, you know, with kids, I can barely make it past the news now. So I guess the earlier the start, the better. But it's incredible, man, to be a part of this, isn't it? I mean, you've been killing it doing the Knicks. And I'm not a big fan of Boston teams, but just how cool would it be if both the Rangers and the Knicks make it to the conference final against the Celtics and the Bruins? How cool would that be?
I mean, it would be unlike anything we've really experienced in a very long time. I mean, obviously, you know, the comparison is to 1994, and I've thought back on that a lot. I was a freshman in high school, at the end of my freshman year, going to high school in Manhattan and being a part of all of that. And like you said, Don, for you and me to be a part of these broadcasts right now, it's a dream come true. It's really unbelievable.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible, and how intense. And every night now, like tomorrow, it'll be about the Knicks. On Tuesday, it'll be about the Rangers. And then, like, every day, somebody takes center stage. And listen, the Rangers-Capitals series wasn't nearly as compelling as Knicks-Sixers, but still, both teams taking care of business. And maybe it'll be the opposite this time, where the Knicks will make short work of the Pacers, and the Rangers will have to go in kind of a Sixer-esque type of long, crazy series. But listen, I don't want to count our chickens. I just thought it was interesting when Boston won last night. I'm like, yeah, man, it's a possibility, but still a lot of work to be done for the Garden teams to get there. And I don't think Boston's going to beat the Florida Panthers anyway, but it still would just be very, very cool. I don't know if that's ever happened in a Final Four, where two sports were going against each other, where the same buildings are being used. I'd have to look. I can't imagine that's happened too often.
That'll be a great piece of research to look up as we go on. And hopefully it comes true, because that would be a lot of fun. But great job today getting the series started by the Rangers, 4-3 winners. You will be on the coverage, obviously, for the rest of the series. Next up Tuesday night, time to be determined. And I appreciate you hopping on your way home tonight, Don.
Oh, I'm in traffic anyway, so I appreciate you, man. Thank you. Good luck tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, and good luck on Tuesday. We'll talk to you later. And, of course, you guys can hear Don LaGreca on the K Show tomorrow at 3 p.m. right here on 98.7 ESPN. All right, we got to take a break or two, since we haven't yet. Jacob Perry, who is producing the show, probably not that happy with me. But Don hopped on, so we wanted to get his thoughts leaving the Garden, and we'll get everything in order. We'll get your calls, 1-800-919-3776. Next hour, Alan Hahn will join me at 8:30. We will shift the conversation to Knicks. But your thoughts on Rangers when we come back, their game one victory. They haven't lost yet in these Stanley Cup playoffs. So that's all coming up. Pat O'Keefe with you on 98.7 ESPN New York.
This is 98.7 ESPN, a Good Karma Brands radio station. WEPN-FM, New York.